Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want to talk about a new movie? Check. Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network, hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that has a lot of pockets, but we use them all the time. It's SIFPOD.
Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most weekends or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Glorious purpose.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer. SIFPOP is his burden and his glorious purpose. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
If I would have known.
No, you're good. It's perfect. Each week we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. What were we supposed to do? She's the only superhero person we know. It's Alice Ginerva McKelly.
G'day.
G'day to you as well. Is that okay? Is it okay for a non-Aussie to say g'day, or is it offensive in some way? I don't want to, you know.
I wasn't aware that it was offensive, so I would say you're fine.
I'm okay. Just trying to be careful, you know?
Look, if you're really worried about offending, you can just say good day.
That's right. You can drop the apostrophe and put all the letters back in there. Or hello. Or hello. Hello works as well.
Yeah. I mean, is it offensive if I go, hey, y'all? Is that offensive?
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit, Alice.
I don't think
maybe
Americans get offended, really, when people do American accents.
No.
Whereas
it's
like,
fun.
Either you nail it or like, try again. But offended, no.
No, probably not. It is Marvel Week here at SIFPOP, and we are, and elsewhere as well, with the finally the release of Black Widow. How many 16 months later, you know, 15 months after it was supposed to come out, something like that, more than a year. It is now in theaters, and
it was
also
supposed to come out before any of the TV shows,
right? Yeah, right. And that's something we can talk about a little bit when we get there. So we're going to talk about Black Widow. We're also going to talk about the first season of Loki. Now, as you're hearing this, it is possible that you've already seen the finale of Loki. We have not. We are recording this about the first 5 episodes of the Loki season. And we did this same thing with Falcon and Winter Soldier, I believe. And I kind of liked it. I liked the idea of talking about, like, going into the finale. How are we feeling? What are we thinking? Because, you know, there's enough conversation that already happens about sticking the landing. How did it finish? Like, that becomes a real big deal. But this way, I think we can really talk about, in the midst of enjoying the show or not enjoying the show, kind of what our feelings are and kind of what we're thinking. We're going to do a best ever challenge, best ever titles of movies that have darkness in them, some sort of word that indicates darkness. And then, of course, we'll do our buried treasure as well. Everybody doing good? Everybody ready to do this? Talk Marvel? We've got...
I'm so ready. I've been waiting so long for this.
I do remember, Alice, when we started talking about you coming on more often, like monthly, you were like, mm-hmm. Black Widow, put it on the calendar. I want to be there. Give me Black Widow. I want it.
I have been waiting so long for a Black Widow movie. It's all right. Not even funny. Like, I've been waiting for her to have her chance to shine. So I'm ready. I have many opinions and they're ready to be expressed.
All right.
And they will be today.
All right. Well, let's just get right into it then. Let's talk about Black Widow.
We have to go back to where it all started.
Where did you think I was all this time?
We have unfinished business.
My girls are the toughest girls in the world.
I'm sorry. We had our orders and we played our roles.
It wasn't real.
It was real to me. To me? Everything.
Natasha Romanoff, also known as Black Widow, confronts the darker parts of her ledger when a dangerous conspiracy with ties to her past arises. Pursued by a force that will stop at nothing to bring her down, Natasha must deal with her history as a spy and the broken relationships left in her wake long before she became an Avenger. And that last part is key. Of course, this is going to be a bit of a prequel, because if you've been paying attention to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and if you haven't, just know we're going to spoil all the other Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. like it is kind of in that place where it's we just, everything before this one is just kind of fair game. So just know that. But yeah, Black Widow is gone, and not just kind of dead. She's dead. Although, of course, in the Marvel Universe, who know, you know, anything can happen with anything. But yeah, so she's back. We've got her, of course, played by Scarlett Johansson. You've got additions like Florence Pugh, Rachel Weisz, David Harbour coming in there as well. William Hurt showing up for a cup of coffee. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Alice, you've been waiting so long. Now is the time.
Okay. So I went in wanting to love this. Mm-hmm. I think I came out really liking it.
Okay. Fair enough. That's good to get the expectations in there. Andrew, what about you?
I really liked it. I really did.
Guys, I get to be the one who goes first. I loved this movie. I had so much fun. I think I will start here. I went in expecting a Marvel movie because it is a Marvel mm-hmm. movie. And I came out going, that is almost more a spy movie than a Marvel movie. It is a really well done spy movie. You know, there's some superpowers, like there's super soldier stuff, and there's some, you know, there's some superpower kind of stuff going on here. But for the most part, you know, this is just, you know, spies who do incredible things kind of movie. So that's where I would start. I would also add that I think watching Scarlett Johansson be front and center is so great. It's about time. She's incredible. She's a great actor. I love what she does, and she's doing great work here. Adding to that somehow in her amazingness, Florence Pugh upstages her is incredible.
She's the best part of the movie easily.
I mean, yes. Florence.
Yes. Can we start there?
Sure.
Can we just make this a Florence Pugh podcast?
No, because I already started elsewhere. But we can continue there. Florence is somehow amongst, you know, like I said, Scarlett doing amazing work is the best thing about the movie, and she blew me away. She has some of the funniest stuff in the movie. She mm-hmm. has some of the most emotional stuff in the movie. I think she ties the film together in so many ways. And she really is the connecting point between the Black Widow of the Avengers and the Black Widow of this universe we're living in for this movie. Like, she is the, mm-hmm. you know, the piece that bridges, those worlds for us. I have plenty more to say, but those are the things, like, right off the top of my head, the reasons that I come down and loved it. Of course, I'm going to talk about the themes and the messages and those kind of things in this movie, because this movie let me just say this. There is a moment in Endgame, right? Where mm-hmm. the women all team up on the battlefield and go after Thanos, right? There's this there's this big girl power moment. I loved it in the theater. And I heard a little girl like two rows behind me when that happened, just, you know, yelping with glee. And I think that's it's important, right? Like, there's that representation thing that is so important. This movie,
she started it all.
It's true. This movie is so much more specifically about issues dealing with, you know, I was going to say femininity. That's not it at all. Issues dealing with just being a woman in the world, like being, you know, like and Alice, obviously, I'm excited to hear you, you know, kind of your insight on a lot of what this movie was saying. But it does it in a way that is so much less manufactured than that moment in Endgame. Everything in this movie feels like a well-seasoned metaphor, and it's also on the surface. Like, they just did a really, really good job, I think, with a lot of the themes in this movie. Okay, I'm done. Somebody else can go. I loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah. I think Florence Pugh, can we just, just real quick. Like, she is my, you know how I said last time I was on that Ryan Reynolds was my soulmate? Mm-hmm. Well, Florence Pugh is my other soulmate. So I have two. It's very important. I have two souls in
here.
Sure.
Totally.
Because of this movie or beforehand?
Before. Like, I just inadvertently, like, gleaned onto her sort of, I think it must have been, I wouldn't have been last year. Was it last year? Was Midsommar in that? No, that was the year before. Oh my gosh.
Nothing COVID. Was last year. Last year is gone. It is not with us. It did not happen.
It's insane.
What a weird movie to stan somebody than Midsommar.
No. So that's not the, it was, I watched Fighting with My Family, then Midsommar, and then Little Women all in the 1 year. And I was just like, she's amazing. And then everything, like, I started following her on Instagram and watching other stuff she's been in. And I was just like, how have I never heard of her before? And so I was, you know, and then I was really excited for her to be in this. And she absolutely blew me away. So could not, literally 5 stars. If it was just Florence Pugh, 5 stars, 10 stars, 15 stars. Nice. In terms of the movie itself, yes, there was a lot of expectation there, which I will say, like, when we get into negatives, that's part of the reason why I'm not sitting in the loved it, because of my own expectations. And I totally understand that's my own bias coming in. But Black Widow, like, she was the only female Avenger. She was one of the main Avengers, and she got fridged. Inadvertently, she got fridged, and that really didn't sit well with me. Like, I think it was a really powerful moment in Endgame. I think that she did amazing, and I think I really loved the movie, but there was just a part of me that was like, oh, we're still there. We're still fridging women so that guys can be able to, you know, achieve their purpose in the movie. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, but there's another one coming out, so I'm okay. And so there was a lot of that sitting at me, but all that aside, and I'll get into it more in negatives, kind of how that ended up playing out, but I do want to say, I think besides Florence Pugh, I also think the rest of the cast were on the A game. Like, David Harbour, Rachel Weisz, and Scarlett Johansson were just so fun to watch. David Harbour was really fun to watch, I have to say. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was definitely a positive for me.
Andrew, some thoughts, man.
Yeah, totally agree with everything you guys said. Florence Pugh is easily the best part of the movie. The chemistry between our four leads is perfect. Love everything about it. And I agree with you, Aaron, that the fact that this is the best spy movie that the MCU has ever put out, and just a really good spy movie in general. Mm-hmm. Like, as I was watching it, I'm like, is this Jason Bourne? What am I watching right now?
Yeah,
it felt, it had that, but you know, better combat, you know, choreography than, you know, the shaky cam stuff you get from the Bourne franchise. Mm. I don't mean to jump into a negative.
Go for it.
So soon, but it's one that I think a lot of people, if you're comic book fans, would want to know. And it has to deal with Taskmaster. Mm. And that is the fact that...
Is Taskmaster ever named in this movie?
No.
Because I didn't even know that. Like, I think I heard in a review afterwards that the name Taskmaster, and I was like, I don't remember them saying that's who that was. But yeah.
Yeah, they do in the trailers. They name this individual.
Interesting.
Yeah, in the trailers they do, but they cut that dialogue from the movie. It's interesting. But anyway, if you're expecting the Taskmaster from the comics, it's not a spoiler, because I think you should know. You are definitely not going to get the Taskmaster from the comics. Having said that, I think that they went an interesting route that really meshed well with this movie, and it made sense, and I appreciated them trying to bring... it's not like the MCU is... you know, known for switching up a character's backstory in order to make it more entertaining and appeasing to, sure, you know, the general audience. Like, if you knew Drax in the comics, he was a human who was a traveling sax musician. Nice. And he got killed by Thanos.
You did say sax, right? S-A-X?
Saxophone.
Okay, yes. Okay, just making sure. Yes.
Yeah, he was a... what was his name? George Michael. Yeah. So anyway.
There you go.
But yeah, so the MCU is not... they've done it before. They've switched around. But it's just one of those characters where, like, hey, if you're familiar and you really like this villain, you may be in for a surprise. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's one of those where it's not what you're going to expect, but it works for the movie.
I
guess it's a co and a prawn, a con and a pro.
Yeah.
Not a co and a prawn.
A co and a prawn. I love prawns.
It's a co and a prawn. I love prawns.
Taskmaster, or the villain in this movie, and we will do a Sif spoil, obviously, for this. So, you know, there are some things we'll want to save to talk about during that. But I will just say this now. I thought was going to be the weakest part of the movie for me. And then the movie did something that I wasn't expecting, and it was kind of like, oh, Marvel has like decided to approach villain, you know, this villain a little bit differently than it usually does, and it ended up being a good part of the movie for me. So I wasn't into Taskmaster, and you know, it just kind of seemed like a guard dog type villain, and then they switched it up on me, and I appreciated that.
I saw the twist coming. Like, sure, I saw the.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah, I did not. I was the one in the dark this time. For sure.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, can I just say that the fight choreography was very well done.
Yeah.
Like, there was so many moments where I was like, oh, you know, and then I literally had to look away and just, like, it was just brutal and it was real. And it was, but I think they all, and I think speaking of Taskmaster, is it a spoiler to talk about the fighting style of Taskmaster?
I don't
know,
because
that's a comic thing as opposed to a movie thing.
I think that's a character thing that's known. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was, as someone who, you know, it really rewards you if you've seen the rest of the MCU. That was so cool to watch, you know, when he did the Black Panther claws and when Taskmaster did the, like, you could tell when it was the Captain America, or they Taskmaster did the Bucky dagger flip. That was cool. Yeah. And I was just like, oh. So that was they were really cool Easter eggs to throw in for sure.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I didn't even notice that one. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really cool like thing. But then even everyone else's fighting style, and like Florence Pugh comments on some of Scarlett, or I should say Yelena comments on Natasha's fighting style, which I was like, ah, yes, I like that they're calling that out. Yeah. So that was really fun overall.
Yeah, the chat,
man, Florence is so good.
The chat is so chiming good in that they do call
Project
it. They call it Taskmaster Protocol or Project Taskmaster. Not sure anybody ever like calls the villain
the
Taskmaster.
Yeah.
But
I genuinely thought it was like they were called Mimic, because there was a bit where the villain's like, "Oh, it's a perfect mimic," and so I was like, "Oh, this must be called Mimic."
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what a Taskmaster's, I guess, it's not a power. It's like he has an eidetic movement memory. Like if he sees somebody fight, he can immediately copy their fighting style.
Mm.
And that's from the comic books. That's not a spoiler for the movie or anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool watching him, because it's like she's fighting the Avengers, you know?
Yeah.
Which is such a good, you know, concept for a villain. And yeah. it's a perfect one because Taskmaster is Black Widow's arch nemesis. Like, everybody has their big nemesis, you know?
Oh.
And Natasha's is Taskmaster.
That's cool.
So
I jump off the action point you were making, Alice, and I agree. I think the action in this is some of the best I've seen in the MCU, and I think I would take that further to say that the finale in this is some of the most exhilarating, intense, like, you know, the big final act action stuff just absolutely floored me. And I just, I had this thought. And this brings in a couple other avenues of things we haven't even talked about. There's very much a theme through this movie about what is family, what is true family, what is real family.
Family.
And that is the thought
which
I had.
Which universe are we in right now?
Well, that is the thought I had was, this is the movie Fast and Furious thinks it is. Like, this is this movie succeeds at balancing like authenticity and reality with themes of family, crazy action, superheroish stunts. You know, like, this movie finds its way to feel grounded and do some of the, you know, kind of play some of the card tricks, the same card tricks that the Fast and Furious universe does. And it just kind of struck me that, you know, it can be done. And that's not even a knock on the Fast and Furious movies. I mean, I know we just reviewed F9 and I didn't like it as much as the others did. But
I hated it, too.
So it's one of those things where I was like, oh, you can do both. You know, it doesn't have to be either or. You don't just have to be crazy and wild. You can actually land both, and I think this one does for the most part, lands both sides of that. What else do you guys want to talk about? How are you feeling about the, you know, this kind of relaunching Marvel at the movies, all that kind of stuff?
Well, I think that we have to talk about the fact that this is a prequel, and I think that this is where I would have the biggest issues with this movie, because it negates a lot of the stakes that you would have if this was, you know, put canonically where it was supposed to go, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, because I'm sitting here and I'm watching this movie and I'm like, man, Rhea Winstone could have been this really interesting villain to, you know, keep coming up, because this movie alone makes me hate him so much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's perfectly bred to be a villain that everybody would oppose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that this is the end of Natasha's story is like, oh, well, I guess, yeah, but I really wish you guys would have done this earlier. It harbingers back to that leaked email, you know, the one that said that they don't want to do a standalone female superhero because it won't make money. And then Wonder Woman came out, and they're like, oh, I guess it can. So,
yeah,
it's really unfortunate.
And Captain Marvel made over $1 billion, which, like, yeah, I didn't realize till I looked it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's like people don't care, which is shocking. Yeah, they just want to see a good movie.
Yeah, but also, like, as a woman, you know, we do make up 50% of the population, and it is nice every now and again to be like, oh, I can dress up as her, like, you know, and yeah, just to see someone who is not just, and I think, to be honest, this is part of Black Widow. This is why I was excited for her to finally have her own movies, because when she was introduced, I do feel, you know, in Iron Man 2, she had that, like, eye candy role that she was playing. Like, there's literally a point in Iron Man 2 where they call her a piece of meat, and you're just like, and you're just used to it. And so as she's developed through all the MCU, and you're just like, oh my gosh, she's like a real person. And then she finally, it culminates in this movie. It was a really big moment for female MCU fans, at least from my perspective.
I agree, and the movie itself is playing in some of those fields as well, in that, try not to give too much away, although I think plot detail-wise, it's not like this is necessarily, you know, spoilerish, but you're dealing with a, you know, plot-wise, a plot where women are subjugated to do the work of a powerful man to you know, make them money, and there's this really interesting thing this movie is playing with the idea of brainwashing, the idea of, oh, it's just meant to be this way, it's supposed to be this way, the idea of a wake-up moment where it's like, oh, it doesn't have to be this way, you know, like, and there's just some things going on here on, you know, the level of feminism, sexism, you know, those kind of issues that I really, really liked. Amongst them, just even some of the conversation. There's a moment, where, and this spoils just a you know, tiny little moment, like a almost, it's really funny, actually, one of the funniest moments in the movie, where David Harbour's, you know, does the old insensitive guy, is it your time of month joke, and she comes back at him with some truth that is just A, hilarious, B, honest.
Is it?
Yes.
The delivery is hilarious. It's horrifying. But
well,
the delivery
yes,
is
yes,
really
but
good.
She delivers it in a way that is, yes, there's meant to be an element of humor there. And I think that's one of the things that's so amazing about the balance of this movie. But that's what I was going to say. B, absolutely terrible. And C, talking about things that, when have you heard, you know, talk of periods or hysterectomies or, you know, in an MCU movie? Like, it's just this... Like you said, you know, at least half of the population is female, and there are just so many female things that just don't come up in movies just because it's usually men that make them, write them, act in them, talk about them. And this movie was not that. And this movie, I think, did a really good job at kind of, you know, doing that, laying that stuff right, like I said, on the surface and metaphorically underneath as well with some of the plot. So... I really enjoyed that.
Jumping off that, like, I just have to say the lore and world building in this was amazing. Like, I want to see more. Like, I am trying to say this without spoiling it, but I want to see certain things that were teased in this movie explored more in future movies because it's really interesting, and I think it could really affect where the MCU goes. I'm thinking specifically there's a moment with a map where I was like, oh, how has this affected the events?
Yeah.
So I just, and also just have the, it's just cool. Spies are cool. You know what I mean? So I kind of just want to see more spy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. When we talk about spoilers, obviously there's a lot of talk to talk about in that realm. Other performances we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about Rachel Weisz. I thought she was great. I don't. She wasn't necessarily the best thing in the movie for me, but at first, again, I thought she wasn't going to be given much to do, and then the movie's like, no, just wait. It's okay. It's all right. And
I think out of the four, she makes the least impact on screen. That's not to say she's not vital or anything. It's more like... the other characters are so well developed, like David Harbour's character, Yelena, and of course Natasha. So it's not her fault that she's not, like, you know, it's the it was the way the script was done.
Man, the opening to this movie, we haven't even mentioned it. This is one of the best Marvel openings. Like, it's just. I loved it. I loved how it brought us into the characters.
Sad.
But it was also beautiful, and it was also again action packed, and I thought that was pretty impressive opening.
Yeah, I will say for me, it just went a little bit long.
The opening
was that
did
just me
or the movie?
Yeah. No. The opening, the movie was a good amount of time. But no, the opening specifically, I'll say the credits seems like they actually did credits.
They actually did opening credits. Marvel movies don't. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember Marvel movies doing that. But yeah, they did opening credits. Which I thought was really interesting.
Which was cool at first, and then I was like, oh, it's still going. It's
well,
like
I think it's
minutes.
Evocative. It's supposed to be evocative of, I could be totally wrong on this, but, you know, the Mission Impossible thing, you know, spy movies kind
of... There's a lot of Mission Impossible elements in this movie.
There really are. Sure there are, yeah. So yeah, I definitely think it was a purposeful choice, and maybe movies are kind of going back to that a little bit. I noticed Godzilla vs. Kong had opening credits, too. So yeah, I don't know if it's a trend or what, but yeah, I noticed that too. That was a little weird for me.
Mm.
But yeah, it makes for a nice little tone cleanser, though. It kind of gives you that ability to do a cold open, opening credits, get into the movie. Like, there is a structural thing there that can work. That's the reason, you know, it's been done that way. But yeah.
I think it's fine if it had just been like a few minutes less, because I think I was just really excited to get into the movie. And then I just was a bit like, oh, okay, we're still here. But actually on that, with David Harbour, you know, we mentioned how he was more explored than Rachel Weisz. I still think him as a character was a little bit wasted.
I wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, because I think he was like the comic relief, like the pure, he was just pure comic relief, but he's meant to be this super soldier that Russia's had this whole time. And I'm there like waiting for him to have a big, big battle, which he gets into a fight with Taskmaster, but it just cuts away from it. And you're just like, oh, so we're not going to see him do like contribute really.
Had the same thoughts. And then thought possibly, is this purposefully Marvel going, let's let the guy be the side character that's fights get cut away from. And let's, you know, he is the Black Widow of this movie in some ways. And, you know, everything that's been done to her as a side character, you know, having her fights cut away from, you know, not being a central part of it or whatever, not being a well-rounded character, like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of on board for in that way, just to go, He's just the big dumb guy, and that's okay. And he's, you know, he's not the focus. He doesn't need that big moment. He's not the focus. So I think that's kind of where I landed, but I definitely had the same feelings. Was like, oh, why aren't we, you know, why haven't we rounded out, you know, this, you know, David Harbour character more, that kind of stuff. And I was like, it wasn't about him. Movie wasn't about him. And that's okay. I mean, it was, of course, you know, peripherally, but you know, not centrally.
Family.
At the movies. Go see the movies.
Oh my gosh. When I saw that the first time, I was like, oh, this is a joke, right? And well, on that, like on not developing characters, I feel like that's possibly what they did with the villain as well, with Ray Winstone. But I do also feel that he didn't make, and like we did touch on this briefly, but he didn't end up amounting to very much, when I feel like he ended up being your typical origin story villain. You know, you hate him. He sucks. Won't have a lot of, you know, like it's, it, I don't know. I'm trying to say without spoiling. It's so hard.
It is so hard. No, but fine. Again, I do think it's thematic, right? The idea of these powerful men are nothing when you wake up. When you wake up to what the world, you know, where power really is in, you know, in the people, in, you know, movements, in those kind of things, these powerful men really don't amount to much, and it's over. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so, yeah, I think again, a lot of those were thematic choices. We know I have a tendency to, you know, make up stuff that's maybe not there. My brain likes to do that. But I do think at least some of that is intentional from this movie to kind of paint those pictures.
I wouldn't be surprised. I will say, so this is my main negative. And like, this is a real, again, this is the expectation thing I was talking about, but I went into this movie really wanting to understand Black Widow as a character more, specifically to do with her past. And yes, we do get glances at her past. We get told about her past. Obviously we learn, like we meet people from her past, but there was certain elements that we were taught, like gleamed on in previous films, like her previous darkness, what she did when she was psychologically conditioned, you know, how she was kind of brought out of that by Hawkeye and into the Avengers and all that sort of stuff. I wanted to know more about that, right? I wanted to know about her darkness. I wanted to know how, like what it entailed, rather than just getting bits and pieces here and there. Like I just, that's the part of it that was really missing for me. Especially again, like not to go into it again, but the fact that she was fridged essentially in Avengers Endgame, I was really excited to kind of round out her character and get that closure. And I still feel like I have a lot of questions about who she was, before she became an Avenger. And that just left me feeling a bit empty, which is why it's a really like it and not a love it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. I don't know that I agree. I feel like I learned a lot about that character and her background and kind of where she comes from and her backstory and kind of, you know, her emotional resonance, I thought, in the movie was really good. But yeah, I totally get that. And I think, you know, those expectations, they're going to play a role in how we view things. All right, we're gonna go to our kind of one last thing here, and then we'll move on. So, what do you got, Andrew?
First off, yes, there is a post-credit scene. Obviously, it's a Marvel movie, but what I want to know from you guys is where would you rank this compared to all the other Marvel movies? I would put it somewhere either in the bottom of like the top third or at the top of like that middle section.
Man, you go first. You go first, Dallas.
Damn it.
I'm throwing it on you guys, but I didn't know if you'd thought about it since you'd watched the movie.
I would say it's top third, but toward the bottom of the top third.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. I pulled up my list the last time I updated it, which has been a while. So
there's 24, so thirds would be an 8. So either the top 8, middle 8, bottom 8.
Hey, just like Pixar.
Yeah, I'd probably put it in like right on the border of that top and middle, you know, thirds. You know, somewhere which around Doctor Strange, you know.
Which is
like
pretty good considering, you know, how the high caliber of the MCU for a lot of people.
Mm. Yeah, I'd put it in that Doctor Strange, Spider-Man Homecoming, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 range for me. So, yeah, somewhere in there.
Nice.
Ah, very nice indeed. All right, well, let's see. Did you have one last thing, Alice? I think we were just answering Andrew's one last thing.
Just that the director repping Australia.
Oh, nice.
Australian
I didn't
woman,
know that.
In
hey.
Fact. Mm-hmm. So cool. I was very, very happy to see that.
Very, very cool. My one last thing, I will address it more during the SIP spoil, but I will just say it is sure interesting to see how the chronology of these releases changed and some of the things that have happened between TV shows and movies. And it's just, it's interesting. I think it works. Yeah. I think they're making it work. But trying to imagine how it would have gone without the pandemic is a really interesting exercise. That in mind, I guess I will make this my 1B, one last thing, point B. Made $80 million here domestically, made another 70-some million worldwide, made $60 million on Disney Plus. So it made over $200 million this weekend, and that, to me, says Disney may be doing this premier access thing with more of their movies. If they know they can, because that $60 million they made on Disney Plus is 100% theirs, and they also get subscribers from that. And the 150 or so million they made, you know, worldwide, they only get what, like half, 60% of that, you know, somewhere in that range. So I think you may see some of these other movies move to premiere access.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I think the main thing with premiere access for me that like in terms of how I think about how it affects new releases is that if you want to watch it again, you don't have to pay for it again.
Right. Yeah.
So that money doesn't get, you know, that what would be money doesn't get counted towards a film's overall box office return. And so I wonder how much that's actually affecting in terms of repeat viewings.
Long-term viewing? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Believe me, they'll crunch the numbers and they'll do what's going to make them the most money. Like, you know, if you want to know if it worked or not, pay attention. Because if they change Shang-Chi to premier access, you know it worked. Like, that is the surefire way for, you know, because right now Shang-Chi is just announced for theaters. They haven't said that's going to be premier access. Jungle Cruise is premier access and theaters, but they haven't said that for Shang-Chi yet. So it'll be interesting to see. Keep your eye on it because day and date streaming is something a lot of people have been wanting for a long time, but it hasn't really made sense for companies. But I mean, if they know they can make that money, they will make that
COVID.
Money. They will make that money. All right, let's move on to the next one. Let's talk about Loki.
I know what this place is. The timekeepers have built quite the circus. And I see the clowns are playing their parts to perfection. Big metaphor guy. I love it. Makes you sound super smart.
I am smart.
I know.
Okay.
Okay.
After stealing the Tesseract during the events of Avengers Endgame, an alternate version of Loki is brought to the mysterious Time Variance Authority, a bureaucratic organization that exists outside of time and space and monitors the timeline. They give Loki a choice, face being erased from existence due to being a time variant, or help fix the timeline to stop a greater threat. Let's start with the admission that everything from episodes 1 through 5 is fair game here. If you are not current with Loki, you may want to skip this because we will be... it is hard to do a TV show without talking spoilers, because how far back do you go? You know, like, do we not spoil anything from episode 1 on? Makes it difficult to talk about stuff. So we will be spoiling episodes 1 through 5. Another good thing about not having seen the finale, we will not be spoiling the finale for you. We will just be talking about episodes 1 through 5. Of course, you got Tom Hiddleston back as Loki. You've got Owen Wilson as Mobius, part of the TVA, the Time Variance Authority. Gugu Mbatha-Raw coming in as I forget what her character. I know her character's name is Ravonna.
Ravonna.
But
she's a judge.
Yeah, like a time judge kind of thing. And many, many others that we'll talk about as we kind of go along with it, including Sophia DiMartino, who plays the variant, we'll just say, as we start off this conversation. But that we may go more into that. What did you guys think overall? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it is just okay? Andrew, you get to start this time.
Loved it, or loving it, I guess. Yeah.
Alice?
Love it.
It's unanimous. This is my favorite. This is my favorite of the MCU shows.
Me too.
Oh, yeah.
I think we want to have like a battle to see who loves it the most so they can go first. Alice, why don't you kick us off since you're the guest?
She did say love it a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I did.
That's
true. I said it 4 times. That's true.
I only said it three. I said it 3. You said it 4. Oh, okay, you said it 3. Yeah, go for it.
First of all, I'm a big world-building and lore fan, if you haven't gleaned that about me just yet. So I get really, really excited when these things, you know, when a world-building really happens in this cool way in which it's happening in Loki. Like the Time Variance Authority, and we did say we could go into kind of spoilers for the first 5 episodes, right? Okay,
yep.
Cool.
Yep.
So the fact that in the very first episode, they're immediately like, oh, you know, Infinity Stones, those things that have caused us pain for the last like 10 years, like literal pain. Oh yeah, they're nothing in comparison. Mm-hmm. They're useless. Throw them away. So that immediately set the tone for me. And it's just so, every episode is so cool. And more than the previous 2 episodes, I've desperately wanted the next episode after the finale, like after finishing the previous one,
mm-hmm.
especially last week, where I was just like, oh no, I need to know. Give me more. Like I'm like an addict now. Mm-hmm. It's not good. What are you doing, Marvel?
Ali, you mentioned something that I think that a lot of people I see online have been questioning about the Infinity Stones that he finds in the first episode. Like, why didn't he grab one of those and use those, you know, try and escape or anything? Infinity Stones only work in the universe that they were forged in. So.
Yeah. Well, he also did. So, he grabbed the Tesseract, and Owen Wilson's like, did you try and use it? And then he's like, yes, it didn't work.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Andrew,
what about you?
It's fascinating whenever they build this, like she said, just this lore is grandiose and amazing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, the TVA, which I wasn't really all that very familiar with. So this was even new to me. So it's like, oh, I get to find out all this stuff and I get to experience it for the first time like a normal person. This is fun.
Yeah, I'm having a blast. There's, you know, it's like, you know, one part Doctor Who, you know, one part Marvel movie. Like you look at like the effects in this are just astonishing. There are so many shots each episode, I would just hang on my wall. It's this show is so beautiful. Some of the color work that's going on here, some of the design work, like the design work even inside the TVA is really cool and interesting. It's just like everything that went into this, it feels like, at least to me, they went into it with a purpose and with thought. Nothing feels thrown together. I'm having a ton of fun. We haven't mentioned the incredible chemistry between Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston, which is just such a fun part of this. Owen Wilson is just wow. He's just wow. You know, like
it's so great to see him back. Can I just say that? Like, it's so great to see Owen Wilson really sit in his stride and entering the MCU with such a fun and appropriate character.
Mm-hmm. You've got like one of the best voiceover artists in history voicing, you know, the time, the clock or whatever, Tara Strong, you know, coming in like off the bench, you know, like it's just a really well done show. And then you've got, I've never heard of her before, Sophia DiMartino. I may know her for something if I looked into it a little further, but she plays Sylvie or the variant or whatever. Yes. And is just hanging with everybody, doing great work, having a good time. To me, has the fun level that takes something to the next level for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's like I'm already interested in the universe, I'm already interested in what's going on, but now I'm also just like having a blast and my endorphins are kicking. It's one of the reasons like episode 3 was kind of my only down episode. It was purposeful. It was just like a kind of a bottle character episode, and the show kind of needed it. Like, I'm not even blaming the show for doing it, but I was like, get me back to the other, you know, Loki kind of stuff. And then the show was like, okay. And then episode 4 and 5 were just like amazing. I'm having a real great time with this. The one negative I would say, and it's not even really a negative, but the one thing I would say is it does feel like Marvel is throwing a lot of spaghetti at the wall, hoping we won't try to think it all through. Like, there is an element of them going into multiple universes, multiple timelines, all that kind of stuff, where they're like, if we just throw enough of it in there, they'll stop trying to figure it out. And they're right, honestly. And that's actually a decent way to suspend your disbelief, is to just be like, it's too confusing, I don't want to think about it. But this show is like, it is kind of upping that ante on, you know, multiple timelines, multiple realities, which, by the way, are two different things. And the show isn't necessarily distinguishing between those things. Because the second you start thinking about what are they resetting, what are they erasing, are they resetting entire realities or timelines or parts of realities or parts of timelines? Like, when they go back and kidnap her, they set the reset bomb and it just gets rid of her toys, right? Like, the floor is still there, everything, it just looks like it gets rid of her toys. Well, that doesn't change any impact she had before that. Like, you know, just like, you know,
that's what I'm saying.
And look, Marvel, I get it. You're going to go this route. And so you kind of have to do this. We know this is where this is happening. These breadcrumbs have been laid from, you know, they talked about a Nexus. Nexus was mentioned in the WandaVision show. And then now they're talking about a Nexus event here. And, you know, they talking about, I think they even said something about Multiverse of Madness in like the intro video. Like, we know this is coming, right? So I get it. I get what they're doing. But there is that part of my brain that wants to think it through and gets frustrated that it doesn't actually make much sense if you start to. So that would be my only slight negative, and it's not really, because honestly, it's so easy to suspend disbelief and just enjoy yourself, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I got a theory. We're allowed to do theories, right?
Sure. I was gonna ask.
Yeah.
So
do we want to do that now? Like, are we done talking about the show? Are you just can't wait to theorize?
It's just one of those things.
Get it off your chest, man. Get it off your chest.
So, at the end of episode 5, you know, they finally find their way to, you know, who is possibly in charge of the TVA.
The person behind the curtain. Yeah.
Mm. Exactly. I think it might be Doctor Strange.
It might be.
The Time Stone. Yeah.
Oh.
It might be.
And then that could be our intro into the Multiverse of Madness.
I will tell you, if it is Doctor Strange, I doubt we find that out in the finale. The shows have done, WandaVision especially, taught me a lot of lessons about what to expect from these shows. There were so many things.
But you're not going to get cameos?
No, you're not. It's going to punt all that big stuff to the movies. So, like, it may wink at something, it may hint at something, and then it'll be like, we'll catch up with this in the movies. Like, that's kind of one of the frustrating parts about these TV shows, is there's resolution that is punted, but I totally get it. It's not like I don't understand why they do that, but that's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
That episode, I have some theories as
yeah,
well
go for it,
as
yeah.
to who it is.
Oh, let's do it. So let's just turn into a theory show. Let's do it. No more reviewing, just okay. theorizing.
So number one theory has to do with Lady Loki. I theorize that Sylvie is not Lady Loki.
Mm-hmm.
So because upon doing some research, like when she was first introduced, there's a character in the Marvel comics called Sylvie who's an enchantress, but she's not a Loki variant. She's someone who was given powers by a previous Loki, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my theory is that the child we see in that flashback is the actual Lady Loki, who was taken and ran away, but then realized very quickly that no matter where she went, she was going to be caught up by the TVA. So I think that that Lady Loki found like a random child who was Sylvie and transferred all of the Nexus power and some of her powers into Sylvie, so that the TVA like started going after her instead, and now she's the one who managed to infiltrate the TVA and took over, and she's the one who's actually running everything in the house, and that's who we're going to see.
Well,
man, Alice, if you're going to be throwing, I'd be afraid if you ever like plan a heist. I'm afraid because it's gonna confuse the police and the investigators forever. Like, man, she's a genius. How's she coming up with all of these brilliant forethoughts and everything?
I like that.
That's actually pretty interesting.
That's great. And I have some thoughts, but it's very important. Chat wants you to know, Alice. And I guess I'll ask you before I spoil this for you. You planning on watching any football? Have you been watching football? Anything like that? Okay.
No, but I did just read the comments, so you didn't spoil it.
Okay,
for me.
Fair enough. Italy won the Euro, so there you go.
I mean, that's just pride. That's
right,
pride anyway.
There you go.
So
there you go.
That's good for me.
I think I did happen to see some stuff. I was already suspecting, as I think most people are, the Gugu and Botham Raw character of having a lot more to do with this, being in cahoots. With some sort of big bad, you know, that kind of thing. And then I saw some speculation about her actual last name was finally like said or something in episode 5, and it is a character from the comics that has like a relationship with one of the big bads or something. So like there's some stuff that could be going on here. I tend not to try to absorb that stuff because I just kind of want to experience it, but, you know.
Is it Mephisto?
I don't. Yeah, no,
that's
I have no
idea. That's the big joke.
My main thing with it introducing, like, because I've seen other theories that, like, it's General Kang or some big major villain
Kang
from the
Conquer.
Comics.
Yeah,
like, it's going to be the next Thanos. My major issue with that being the result is that I feel that they've built it up, and this could be a slight negative of the show, but it's like a pre-negative. They've built it up a lot as to like, who is this person, right? And if you're introducing someone completely new that we've never seen before, never been touched on before, it's not going to have that impact. So you're just going to be like, it's going to be like, ooh, it's Kang the Conqueror. And yeah, if you're a Marvel Comics fan, you're going to be like, whoa. But like for, you know, us noobs, I'm just going to be like, oh, it's a dude. And then I'll go and research him later and be like, oh, that's cool. But I feel like,
I mean, that's how I felt about Thanos the first time
Thanos.
I saw Thanos.
I was about to say, isn't that how Thanos started?
Scene.
People were like, who is that blue
but
guy?
But it was a
post-credit
scene.
Avengers?
It was a post-credit scene.
I was
going to
say, that wasn't a major plot reveal of the actual movie. That was a post-credit scene that teased mm-hmm. it. But this is like, they have built up to it for 5 episodes, and the last episode ended, you know, you'd think the next scene is going to be the reveal.
If it is Kang.
Yeah, and also in WandaVision too, at the end of WandaVision, they teased that there was somebody mm-hmm. stronger. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, so
if it is
the same person.
If it is Kang, I think that was the name I saw. I know nothing about that name. I assume that's a brother of Kong. King Kang.
Kang Kong.
Mm-hmm. Kang Kong.
Kang Kong. If it is, my guess knowing these shows would be that what is revealed behind the curtain is Ravonna, and that she will be the final battle, and then the post-credit scene might wink at Kang. Like, that would be my guess, something like that.
Well, I have a second theory that if my first theory isn't correct, my second theory is that it's Mobius.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
So that Mobius is Kang, and this whole time has been pretending to be Mobius, and then that, because he left, right? The last we saw him, he went into a
that would
doorway,
be wild.
So, like,
that would be wild.
Wow.
Wow.
He just walks out from behind the curtain as Kang. Wow.
Wow, you guys figured it out.
Yeah.
Wow. That was a horrible impression.
Well, we're going to find out. I will say it was also great. Episode 5 was my favorite episode. One of my favorite things the MCU has ever done was episode 5 of Loki. I just loved it so much. I loved how weird it was. I loved how wacky it was. I loved that there were so many Lokis.
Alligator Loki.
I
was going to say Croaky. If anything happens to Croaky, we riot.
Richard E. Grant coming in as old school Loki, just like off the top rope. Just great stuff. Great stuff.
That scene with him and he's like showing off the true power of a Loki, and both Sylvie and Loki realize, like, I guess this is what we're truly capable of, you know? It makes you think, oh, maybe that there's something that we still yet don't know about Loki as a character, and that there's more for us to discover.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I will mention this because I'm me. And I have to. The way this show is dealing with self-work and therapy and the idea of understanding yourself and making peace with yourself and changing yourself, like the idea of self-change and changing the definition of who you think you are, is really, really smart. You know, there are things parading as humor and fun and conversations that underneath are really serious like self-actualization techniques and really serious ideas of, you know, how do you find a way to love yourself? Like that whole idea of whether she is a Loki or not, he thinks she is and they think she is, you know, the idea of through this woman, he's learning about himself and that he is lovable and that he won't always be alone, that he could be loved, you know, and that starts with loving himself. It's really interesting, beautiful stuff going on underneath here as well, that I'm just always amazed at and always impressed with what they're doing. And I guess that leads me to my final question. Would you date your opposite gender self?
I was going to say, I feel like a big, big thing with this show has been this weird, like, kind of relationship happening where I can almost sense every audience member being like, don't kiss. But, like, I can feel the tension and the chemistry, but, like, don't kiss because that's weird. Like, it's just so many things happening
there,
at one point.
There are many avenues this conversation could go in. Let's just keep it with, I think there's absolutely a world where you have to learn to love yourself, you know? And that's, you know, it doesn't have to be, it
but
doesn't
not
have to
way.
Be
this
a way. Literal, you know, actual other entity that is you.
But see, this is the problem with them having this as a character, because then it does invite these conversations. Like, I was like, if they end up getting together and they have a kid, is that kid Loki? Or, like, what does that mean?
No.
And it just, you know?
Listen.
Is it incest if it's yourself?
No.
Or is it, like...
No, it's just, it's
incest.
What is it called with worms? Worms do that. Worms have babies with themselves. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it asexual?
Maybe it is asexual. No, asexual means non-sexual, I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So self-sexual.
That's something else. But but yes. No, worms definitely reproduce with themselves.
What you're saying is Loki's a worm.
That's what I'm saying. Listen, if we didn't know that through his actions,
he's been called
already,
worse.
He's been called worse. That's for sure.
Oh, and can I say, you know, we said that cameos don't happen in the shows, but Lady Sif, they brought her back for a loop.
Yeah,
I did like
that's
that.
True.
And because there was a very small Thor cameo as well in that last episode. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit where it's going underground, like into the Loki hideout, yeah. and you see a tiny Thor in a jar, like mm-hmm. banging against the glass.
Frog Thor.
Well, I'll have to rewatch that.
Yeah, and there's the Loki chopper, and like, I saw a lot of this stuff from.
No, that was the Thanos chopper.
Thanos chopper. That's what I meant. Yeah, totally.
Which that's what he killed Drax with.
Well, there you go. There you go.
So it all comes full circle in this podcast too.
We're loving it. We're excited to see the final episode. Maybe we'll do a brief final thoughts in our members show next week. Speaking of which, let's thank our SifPop members. You guys are amazing. We love you. This week we talked about, is there ever a possibility of Marvel burnout? Will you ever get tired of all the Marvel content that's coming out? Not gonna give you our answers.
May surprise you.
You'll have to listen to the show to find out. If you are a SifPop member, that shall be waiting for you in your own personal podcast feed, one that has all the episodes, all the bonus episodes, and no commercials. And you can find out all the information about that and other levels of support at the Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. Thank you for your support. We appreciate it, and we love doing those bonus episodes for you guys. So check that out there. It should be available soon. All right, let's get into our best ever challenge, best ever movie titles with a word that indicates darkness in them. Now, this category is begging for loopholes, so if you need to use a veto, feel free. But it's kind of fun to kind of think of these. I tried to include in my top five like several different kinds of words. In fact, I think I have four different words in my top five that indicate.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Indicate some sort of darkness, so...
Not me.
I've got one that might be a loophole.
All right. I have one that's my first... I'll start when... This is my closest to a loophole. I actually have a replacement if this is vetoed.
Is it Saving Private Ryan?
It is not Saving Private Ryan. Alice is like, I don't get that joke.
I was like, Tom Hanks?
No, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to give her some backstory on this, just so she knows the caliber of shenanigans that you try and pull whenever it comes to best ever challenges.
Listen, I got a lot of backup on this one, so I feel perfectly fine.
So the challenge was... Best movie with a female character's name in the title.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose Saving Private Ryan because technically there are women named Ryan.
That is true.
You can say that about any name. Any except for like Richard.
Listen, a lot of Ryans contact me and said, thank you for sticking up for us. Ryan isn't...
I don't believe you. I think you're full of crap right now.
Ryan is a non-gender specific name, much like Aaron is. Aaron is, you know, has both male and female versions. And
I've never met a female Aaron. I've never heard of a female Aaron.
Oh, actually, there's a lot here in the U.S. It's E-R-I-N as opposed to A-R-A-A-R-O-N.
Oh, that's Aaron. You just said a different name. It's a different name.
That's not
Aaron. That's like saying that Alice and Alex are the same name.
Wait, it's Aaron and Aaron.
That's Aaron.
Yeah.
It's Aaron and then it's Aaron. It's not my fault, guys.
Aaron?
In the U.S., they're pronounced the exact same.
That was beautiful. I loved that so much. That was one of my favorite things. Anyhow, I've never lived that down, nor should I. I knew what I was getting into when I picked that.
Ridiculous. Is it that caliber? Hopefully
not. No, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Although it is, it'll probably get vetoed. I went with Moonrise Kingdom at number five and went with Moonrise as the dark word.
I'm fine.
I'm fine. All right, we'll count it then. Moonrise Kingdom is my number five.
Because if the moon's... Well, I guess technically the moon could be out during the day.
But,
you got it.
All right, fair enough. I
got no qualms.
I love this Wes Anderson movie. It was really the first Wes Anderson movie other than the
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Mr. Fox, thank you. It was really the first Wes Anderson movie other than that that I came away from my first time just loving. And since then, there have been others. I've enjoyed his later career more than his earlier career, in fact. But I love the kids in this. I love just the sweetness of the plot of this. I love the quirkiness of it, which you're always going to have with Wes Anderson. I really enjoyed Moonrise Kingdom. So that's my number five. Nice. Andrew, what do you got at number five?
Number five, I'm going to go with The Ghost and the Darkness.
Mm-hmm. Good call.
You know me, love this movie. It's great. Based on a true story about lions that killed over 100 workers in Africa. It is, the performance by Val Kilmer is not too great. He doesn't know what an Irish accent sounds like. But the score for this movie is superb. It is like one of my favorite film scores ever. It's like powerful and like upbeat, while at the same time you still get traditional African elements in it. It's great. Cinematography is beautiful. This movie is beautiful, and it's also horrifying. It's a very violent movie with a lot of practical effects that I don't know how they did. So, yeah, I highly recommend The Ghost in the Darkness.
Very nice. Salas, what do you got at number five?
I have Judas and the Black Messiah.
It's a great choice. It's a great choice.
So this is definitely, obviously, the most recent one on my list, unless something else came out this year that I wasn't aware of. I went in kind of being like, oh yeah, this is going to be an Oscars, you know, film. But I really liked Daniel Kaluuya. So I was like, all right, let's go. And the acting, that's all I have to say. The acting was just, it made the little actor in me so happy. I was like, oh, they're so good. Although I was also like, oh, I'm really excited to watch this with subtitles, because it definitely took me a sec to like lean into, the accent. But everything about it was so powerful and interesting. And I honestly think it will create really interesting very vital and interesting conversations around its themes and topics. But also, it's what I really like is that it is a movie surrounding an issue and an important historical event that I had no idea about, first of all. Mm-hmm. But it's done in a way that it's just a good, like, it's a great movie. And when you do both of those, like, you've got me. So yeah, yep. Loved it.
It is one of two Oscar contenders from this latest Oscars that would fit this category. I had them both in my honorable mentions. I won't mention the other one in case somebody has it in their top five. I'll mention it later. Mm. All right, that brings it back to me. My number four might get trumped. This is where I have Black Panther. Anyone?
Oh, I forgot about Black Panther.
An entire Marvel episode.
Oh, how did that happen?
You can tell us where you would have had it if you had remembered. But this, I had it at number four. And from here, actually all five in my top five, because Moonrise Kingdom is as well, is in my top 200 of all time that I do each year. So Black Panther is just such a phenomenal film. It is top-notch Marvel. In many ways, it is Marvel ascending to something else. You know, they are becoming even more than themselves with this movie. So, I love Black Panther. I think it's great. I think the performances are amazing. Does it have issues? Yeah, of course it does. But man, what a great movie. Andrew, what do you got?
Killmonger is right up there with Thanos, like, for the best Marvel villain ever.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. What do you got at number four?
Me? I got Zero Dark Thirty.
Mm-hmm. Also my honorable mentions.
Me too.
What a phenomenal movie. I'm not going to spoil the ending for any of those who don't know. No, Jessica Chastain kills it in this movie. She carries the entire movie on her shoulders, really. And the weight of the character is like, you can see that as this, like, time progresses. Like, she still has that determination and steadfastness that, you know, she has to find Bin Laden. And you can see it weighing on her and taking its toll on her throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the movie, she's just bawling because it's over. You know, it's such a great performance. That last 30 minutes of the movie, even though we all know how it ends, is so compelling and like a white knuckling. It's great.
Yep. Alice, your number four.
Yeah, well, I would have had Black Panther here had I remembered it existed, but instead I have Star Trek Into Darkness.
I had that in my honorable mentions as well.
Me too.
First of all, I'm a big Benedict Cumberbatch fan. In fact, I can prove it because for those of you watching the video, that's me and nice. Benedict Cumberbatch. So I Very met nice. Him. And I've been a huge fan since Sherlock. And so when he was going to be in the Star Trek movie, I was like, oh my God. And then he ended up being really, really good. I'm also not. So my partner, Toby, he is a huge old Star Trek fan, like Star Trek Next Generation. So he's not the biggest fan of this, but I am. Mm-hmm. It's the big argument in our house, new Trek versus old Trek. But it is just so good. The action's so great. I really love him as Khan. I really love the way the story progresses, and I just always know I'm going to have a good time when I watch it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Star Trek Into Darkness.
I am with you, Alice. I really like Star Trek Into Darkness. I think that it's a really good movie. A lot of people don't like it. I like it just as much as the first of this new iteration of Star Trek movies. Mm. I think they're both great. Third one, not so much.
Me too.
Yeah. You showed your picture with Benedict Cumberbatch. I feel like I should pull up my interview of Florence Pugh, you know, since we were talking Black Widow today. Because that's what I was thinking when we were talking about how awesome she was. Like, because I interviewed her on the awards carpet, on the blue carpet at the Critics' Choice Awards. Yeah. And she was just like the sweetest. Like, she was amazing. So just
Isn't
know
it
that.
Isn't it nice when the people you love are nice?
Yes. Yes, it is. It is very nice.
This is the hand that shook Steven Tyler's whenever I was in China at
there
the Epcot Center.
You're supposed to relate that to the topic at hand somehow. Let's see. any dark movies?
Steven Tyler
Steven
probably.
Tyler?
There's probably some Aerosmith song in one of those Marvel movies somewhere.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that moves us on to our number threes. Is that correct? Yeah. My number three is Men in Black.
Honorable mentions.
I was just thinking the other day that if you didn't live through the Will Smith supernova moment, like, it's hard to explain how much he took over pop culture for, you know,
you
3 or 4 years. It was from Independence Day on, like, it was a solid 3 or 4 years of just like, this is the most charismatic human being I've ever seen on screen. Like, it was a lot of fun. And Men in Black was right in that run. And he and Tommy Lee Jones are so good in it. And it'll always have a soft spot in my heart.
It's crazy the chemistry between them works so well, because not only the characters are so different, but if you were to tell me that there are two actors who would have good chemistry, these two would be like the bottom. Like, they are so different from one another, but they make it work because they are so absolutely themselves.
Yeah. Yep.
It's great.
Yep. Let's see. So
me, number three.
What do you get your number three?
You might trump it, but Black Hawk Down.
No, that was going to be my replacement number five. That was going to be my number five replacement. So there you go.
Well, you done did wrong. It should have been higher. Anyway, Black Hawk Down. This is one of those movies, forgetting how powerful and emotional and amazing it is, it's one of those movies where you go back and you watch it and you're like, oh, they're in this? Everybody who wasn't somebody is in this movie. And you look at them now, and they're like, oh, they're an A-list ass. Tom Hardy's in this movie? Nikolai Coster-Waldau, who plays, what's his name?
Jamie.
Lannister?
Jamie
Lannister? Yeah, how could I remember his name but not his character's name? That's not
you
normally
remember
the way that
Nikolai
goes.
Coster-Waldau, Waldau. But couldn't remember Jamie.
Remember Jamie Lannister, yeah.
Nice.
But there's like so many people in this movie that you're like, oh, they're a big deal right now. And yeah, it's fun that way to see those people. But getting back to the movie and in and of itself is one of the most profound war dramas ever, because especially in the United States, we get a lot of, you know, when our war dramas are for, like, you know, heroic battles or, you know, something that we won. This is an entire movie of a we done messed up. you know, and it's the determination and the will of, you know, the individual soldiers to look out for one another, which I think this movie is incredibly powerful. I love it.
I agree. I agree with you. Alice, what's your number three?
Mine's a documentary called Blackfish.
Oh, yes. I've seen Blackfish. Yeah.
I really, really... I mean, it sounds kind of weird for me to say I really love this documentary.
We know what you mean.
Because,
we know what you
yeah,
mean.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of my favorite documentaries too, but it's rough. Mm-hmm.
It is. But it's just so well made. It's so powerful. And I just... It communicates its message so well. And it really makes you feel for these orcas and for Tillicum. And... It's also oddly, again, it's weird to say, oddly rewatchable. Like, I've shown it to so many people and I've never been bored when I've shown it to them. Mm-hmm. And can I just say as a tangent, I once did a double feature of Blackfish and Grizzly Man, and
good
that
night.
Was not a good time.
Good
I
night.
Was.
I You're was, probably just so like, nature is horrifying. Or humans are stupid.
Both. Yeah. Both. And it was, so I wouldn't recommend that because you'll just be really, really depressed. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, if you haven't seen it and you like documentaries and you like nature documentaries, but also like conspiracy documentaries, and also kind of psychological thrillers, like this is the one for you.
Yeah.
I had to look up to see what beat Blackfish for a... best documentary that year. It was a Searching for Sugar Man, which is a great documentary, but I think Blackfish is a far superior documentary.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right,
Aaron.
On to our number twos. This will be Trump by Andrew, I believe, but I have The Dark Knight at number two.
Trump.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be Trump by both of you. Fine. Okay. Fine. Andrew, what do you got at number two?
Well, it's possible that my number two is your number one. I'm going to go with Black Swan.
No.
Oh, my
no.
God. I forgot about Black Swan, too.
I had Black Swan in the honorable mentions.
Wow. Okay. I thought that you might have had this. I'm curious to know what your... I think I might know what it is.
I don't think you do. It's less of a loophole than Moonrise, but it's a little bit of a loophole word. So, yeah. I don't know what you meant.
But anyway, Black Swan. This is a trippy movie that is so, so good. It's a masterclass in doing a modern horror film that is one of the most beautiful horror films I've ever seen, which is weird to say. It's the simple, you know, the element of ballet in and of itself is beautiful, yet he somehow finds a way to mask horrifying elements within it that is so compelling. Like, you never would have thought that a ballerina movie would be as terrifying as it is, but...
Mm-hmm. But it is.
Congrats, you did it.
Welcome to Black Swan.
Is probably easily, what I would say, easily Natalie Portman's best performance ever, possibly top 10 greatest performances by any actor or actress ever.
It's good stuff. Yeah. It's a good choice. Sure. Where would you have had it, Alice, if you had remembered it?
Well, clearly I need to be fired because I have just made a huge mess. I would have had this like at number two or something.
Okay.
It's so good.
Right.
It's so good. But what I do have instead at number two is a move. This is my loophole. What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, that works.
Oh, man. No, it wouldn't have made my list, but I forgot about it in my honorable mention. Yeah. I love this movie so much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. So it's Taika Waititi's from New Zealand, but it's like New Zealand, Australia, same thing.
Your neighbors.
Slightly different accents. But I love this movie so much. When I first... this was the first Taika Waititi movie I'd ever seen. My dad dragged me to it to see it at the independent movie theater near here in Melbourne. And I was like, okay, this is going to suck. Because I'd never heard of it. And I was still a silly young teenager that didn't understand that small movies could be good. And I saw it and I laughed my head off and... I immediately fell in love and went home and watched everything he'd made, watched a bunch, you know, a bunch of Flight of the Conchords. Like, it's just so funny, but also dark, which is a perfect sort of, I love a good dark humor, you know, where things are brutal, but they kind of make fun of it in a way that's really accessible. And then when, you know, going off of this, the fact that the TV show has Matt Berry in it, who's one of my favorite actors from like IT Crowd and Toast of London and stuff.
Laszlo's my favorite character from the show.
Yeah, he's just so good. So good. So yeah, if you like humor, if you like mockumentaries, if you like vampires, if you like werewolves, not swearwolves, then this is the movie for you. If you haven't seen it, like, stop listening and come back later and go watch it and then come back. It's so good.
And new season kicks off in a couple months. New season of the TV show.
Cannot wait.
So excited.
So, yeah. Good choice. Good choice. All right. Those are our number twos. On to our number ones.
What you got, Aaron?
If you'll notice how quickly I was like, nope, that's not a loophole. That's because Shadow is in my number one. Shadow of a Doubt is my number one in the category. One of my favorite Hitchcock films. This is a story about, and it's one of his older films, but it's a story about a young woman who whose uncle visits, and mystery ensues, and just the acting in this is astounding. The plot is really intricate and interesting, and I love everything about it. Hitchcock's a really talented director, and this is a phenomenal movie. So yeah.
Did they shoot this in the same place they shot Psycho?
No.
Mm.
No.
Because whenever I just pulled it up on IMDb, there was a picture of her standing in the doorway looking up a staircase, and it looks so much like the staircase from Psycho.
Yeah. No, it's totally different. It was there about 25 years apart. Shadow of a Doubt was about 25 years before Psycho.
This was 1943.
Yeah. And how close was Psycho? That would have been
60.
60, right? Yep. So I was a little off.
You're only 3 years off. Well done, sir.
Oh, thank you. All righty, Andrew, I think, well, actually we know both of your number ones, don't we? There's no, no more attention. Let's go ahead and talk about it.
Why Duck so night. Serious?
Wow. Yeah. So I'm gonna serious. Let, wow.
What if they cast Owen Wilson as the Joker? Do you want to know how I got these scars? I'm going to let Al. I've gushed on this movie like so many times in this podcast. I want to hear what Alice has to say.
Alice.
Oh, well, okay. So let me say, this is the first or the most vivid early memory I have of going to see a theater and being so tense in my seat that I literally was squirming. The fairy scene with the two bombs. It has the score going up all the way up to the pitch. I remember being like, oh my God, I couldn't handle it. And that right there is just, that tells you the power of this movie. Like, that is such, in comparison to the rest of the film, like, that's just a scene. And then there's just so much more. And then as well, obviously, Heath Ledger, RIP, Australian, and he's so good. And I know that there was so much like controversy when he was cast because everyone's like, he's too much of a pretty boy to be the Joker. And then, and then it's like, it's called makeup and acting. And he was so good. And then Christian Bale's such a good, like, Batman. I really like him as Batman. I think that because he's obviously an amazing actor, he just brings so much to the role. Plus, you got Gary Oldman. Like, can you tell how much I love this movie? Because I'm just bouncing from one. I have so much I want to say. And it's so powerful and it's so well made. And all the way through to the end where you've got him, you know, going off into the night and Gary Oldman doing that, the monologue about, like, he is the Dark Knight. And it's like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And it's just, oh, I don't think they'll ever make a better Batman movie. I've said it. Fight me. Go on. Ali G. Mick on social media. Come.
Well, they already did. They made Lego Batman. I don't know what you're talking about. They already bested this one, so.
Incorrect.
As much as I love Lego Batman. Although, I got to say, this new one coming out, it looks interesting.
Yeah. You mean emo Batman?
Yeah, emo Batman.
Alice is not amused.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, he's got a lot of eyeliner on, and he's got the straight
hair. I'm glad he has eyeliner on, because every single Batman has that eye makeup on, yet when he takes the mask off, it's suddenly gone. I want to see one that actually commits and has the dark eyeliner.
I
think it's
just, I picture him like in front of the mirror before he goes crime fighting. He's like, hang on, and just being like...
There you go.
Just like what I do in the morning.
Got to do the eye darkener. Yeah. Got to do
just
it.
Just a bunch of coal. Yeah. Just like.
Yep.
I'm ready. Yep.
All right.
Well, there you go. I had it at number two. So obviously that would be our collaborative choice would be The Dark Knight in this category. Honorable mentions. Coolio. I had Darkest Hour. Enjoyed that. Dark
Still
Waters.
Need to see that.
Dark Waters is one that went way under the radar. You should check that out sometime if you get a chance. Donnie Darko, that's a little bit of a loophole there, but Army of Darkness, Pitch Black, really enjoy.
Man, that's a good movie. That is an underrated movie.
Yeah, I agree.
I've never seen it.
You want to see Vin Diesel give a good performance? Watch Pitch Black.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's true.
I was meant to watch it for uni too, and I just didn't and pretended I did.
Black Klansman. Wanted to mention that one as well. Before Midnight, I thought would be a good one to mention. And then...
Oh, that's in that...
Trilogy.
Trilogy, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one that was up for an Oscar last year in this category was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is also very, very good. So, yeah.
Such a good movie.
Andrew, what about you?
I only have I have two that you didn't mention. The first one was very close to making my list. Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Sure.
And a movie that is what I think underseen, but is really, really good, is Midnight Special. It's like what would happen if, you know, what would really happen if, you know, somebody was born with superpowers and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like it. It's got a great score. Good movie. Nice. Go watch it.
Alice, did you have any honorable mentions that weren't named?
Oh, I had plenty. So first on my list, well, another one that was nominated for an Oscar last year, One Night in Miami. That's a good movie.
Sure, yep.
I have, so there's this movie called Night and Fog. I don't know if you guys know about it. It's like a 37-minute kind of documentary about the Holocaust and stuff. If you did a film degree, you've seen it. I guarantee you have. It's like one of the first films you're made to see. It's very, very powerful, 37 minutes. Nocturnal Animals I have. I quite enjoyed it.
I didn't really like that movie, but yeah.
Really? I loved it.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would too, except for like the opening of like lots and lots of, you know, naked women dancing. I was like, this is weird. And then it was really good. Black Mirror Bandersnatch.
Oh, wait. I'm thinking of a different movie.
That's true. Black Mirror Bandersnatch could be in this category. Mm-hmm. Good call.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I thought it was a cool like exploration of the streaming movies. The Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
I love me some Jim Henson. This is Moonlight as well. If we're going to go with Moonrise Kingdom, Moonlight was one. And this was one that I was like, oh, I'm not sure if it fits. Oblivion? I was like,
that's a bit of a stretch. Might have vetoed that. I do like that movie, though. I do like Oblivion. It's a good movie.
Well, that's why it's an honorable mention.
There you go.
I was like, there's plenty. And then finally, I have a movie that you might not have seen. It's called The Nightingale. It's an Australian movie. It's really good. It's basically about a woman who, it's by the same woman who did The Babadook. The same filmmaker who did The Babadook, but it's about a woman who is a convict in Australia and is about to like work off her indenture. And then one day this officer comes in and rapes her and kills her baby and kills her husband. And it is really, really intense. And so then she goes on a revenge quest to find the officer who did that and pairs up with an Aboriginal tracker and they go on a quest together to find him and take her revenge. And it's really good. It's brutal. Like, it is brutal. And all the trigger warnings, because it's very violent, but it's very well made.
I think
it's... You can watch it on Hulu.
I think it's a great triple feature with Blackfish and...
Grizzly Man.
Yeah.
If you really just want to have no faith in humanity whatsoever, right. Like, that's just... Yeah.
One Night in Miami, if I would have thought about it, would definitely have made my top five. So we had one.
Might as well.
We each had one where we're like, oh man, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
and one more, Nightcrawler, the Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
You see,
don't
because
tell me
when
that.
You so when you mentioned
I just didn't do night. Gyllenhaal. I didn't think of night. I thought of midnight.
I didn't either.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
What was
done.
The movie that you mentioned, Alice, that he was in at the beginning of the movie? With Jake Gyllenhaal?
Nocturnal Animals.
That's what initially when you said that, that's what made me think of Nightcrawler because I thought that's what you're talking about. Mm. But
there you go.
Man, well, Nightcrawler's good.
So good. Oh, so very good.
And it would have been on my list. My list is just void now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think mine is too. We might have to come back to this.
Let's move on to the buried treasure for the week. Andrew, you're gonna kick us off. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about this week?
I have got a selfish little thing I want to promote, selfish promotion.
Oh, okay. A little log roll.
Yeah, exactly. I uploaded a video to YouTube, everybody.
Yay!
I know.
Nicely done.
Yeah. If you remember a couple weeks ago, I was talking about how I bought a 100-year-old vice, like a woodworker's vice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said I was going to restore it.
Yeah.
Well, I documented the entire process of, you know, from going from a giant rusted piece of 100-year-old metal to something that looks like it's an art piece.
Nice.
I put a lot of heart and work into making this thing look good. I think I did a good job. And yeah, it's up on my Flick Freaks YouTube channel. So yeah,
nice.
You can check it out there.
Very nice indeed. Check that out at Flick Freaks. I'm going to talk about a movie from 1973 that I had never seen before, but I watched Serpico for the first time. This is Al Pacino, one of his earlier movies, and this is based on the true story of Frank Serpico, who was a policeman in New York City who brought to light a lot of corruption that was going on in the police force. And I really enjoyed this. I had really no clue what I was kind of getting. I mean, I had a little bit of a clue. It was about crime and that kind of stuff. But it's
because you're a criminal.
Because I'm a criminal. Yeah. But it was nice to go back to early Pacino and just see, like, you know, a lot of those things you love about him are there, but it's also, he's playing a different kind of character, and it's very understated, and, you know, he has kind of gotten tagged with a lot of over-the-top acting, you know, in his later career. I get that. I understand that. He's so talented, though, and you can just see it in this movie. And then I was also impressed with the true life kind of stuff of it as well, you know, doing the research afterwards about Frank Serpico and kind of what he went through. It is pure early 70s cinema. You know, it is definitely, you know, from a time. So take that for what it's worth in all the good ways and bad ways. But yeah, Serpico, I wanted to mention that I enjoyed it quite a bit. So, Andrew, have you seen Serpico?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You didn't like it as much as I did, I take it.
No, I really do
it
a lot.
Okay, okay.
All right. No, yeah. This is your moment, Aaron. I'm going to let you.
No, I thought there was a reaction. I thought when I said Serpico, you were like, oh, that terrible movie. But I totally misread it. So, yeah.
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 Yeah. If you love a man's garden, you got to love the man.
There you go. See, you know Serpico. You know how it goes. All right, Alice, what do you got for your buried treasure this week?
Well, as we know, the world is kind of sad right now and sucky and horrible. And so, you know what I like to do every now and again is have a show that's just all nice. And that show is Making It.
Okay.
It is a reality show hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. Think like British Bake Off, but instead of baking, it's arts and crafts. So it is just the most wholesome show you could ever watch. Everyone in it is just so nice. I cry from happiness and being touched every single episode. It's right now on season 3. It's on NBC. And we get it like through other avenues down here and down under. But it is just just really nice. Like, everyone's really wholesome and, like, collaborative, and everyone's got a really beautiful story. But also what I really, really like about it is that, unlike Cooking Show, where it's like at the end of the day, they're all kind of just making the same thing, everything, all the crafters is what the contestants are called. They all have a craft that, you know, they specialize in or love to do. And so they'll all take the brief and do it in their own very unique style. So it's using different kinds of crafts, different materials. They all have different backgrounds. The most recent episode, for example, they had to make like a closet, like a walk-in sort of closet, like workspace thing for someone they loved. And there were people who made like used mural art. Some people used felt. Some people used like tires to make statues and stuff. And it's just really lovely, and it's just a really nice part of my week every single week. So I really recommend it if you want to watch something nice and wholesome and fun, and then also kind of informative as well.
Do you know where it's streaming, where it's playing? Is it
It's an NBC show, so I'd assume like you can watch it on NBC, or is it Peacock, the streaming?
Yes, I believe it is on Peacock and on Hulu, apparently.
And Hulu, there you go. Yeah.
As well. So, yeah, so you can check out Andrew's new video on the Flick Freaks YouTube. Serpico is available for digital digital rental, if you want to check that out. And Making It is available streaming on Hulu or Peacock.
And hey, Alice, I got some good news for you.
Yes?
You recommended a show last time you were here.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. It's fun. You were talking about good and wholesome shows. This is a good and wholesome show. It just makes you happy. You're like, oh, everything's just working out for them and everything's great. Good for them. Good for them.
It's nice to feel that way.
Yeah.
Very nice. No, I'm really enjoying it. I really am.
Very nice.
I'm so glad. Yeah, can you sense a theme in all my recommendations? The world sucks.
Here's no, because you recommended you Blackfish, and you also recommended Grizzly Man, so you're kind of all over the spectrum here.
It's true. It's fair
just
point.
Just like the world.
Well, congratulations to all of us. We set out to accomplish a podcast, and podcasting has been accomplished. Well done to one and all. You are heroes in your own regard. Thanks so much for joining us today. SifPop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, Betty.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show. Thanks to Drew for putting together some of the visual content for the video show.
Woo! Big claps!
And thank you to Alice for hanging out with us again today. Alice, where do you want people to find you online?
As always, you can find me at Ali G Mick, A-L-I-G-M-I-C-H on Instagram or Letterboxd. And I'll just plug it once again. My friends and I are going through the entire Disney catalog right now, going through the MCU. And this week we're watching Avengers Age of Ultron. So that'll be fun. You can find us on Instagram at once.upon.a.marathon. We're going to become much more active on it now because I've decided to not just leave it until the last minute anymore. So it's going to be really fun from now on to be on.
Well, we appreciate you being here, and go check out Alice's other stuff. I'm sure you will enjoy it. Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members as well for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. There's different levels with different bonuses, so go check that out. You can get the bonus episode as well as a monthly hangout, all sorts of fun stuff at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. You can comment, rate, or leave a review at Apple Podcasts or email us feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than ever fully trusting a Loki. We will be back next week with Space Jam and Escape Room Tournament of Champions. So a couple sequels.
I gotta watch the first Escape Room now, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
All right.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.